This episode of A Slice of Ham is brought to you by my lovely Patreon supporters, my patrons on Patreon. How are you guys doing? Oh, you guys smell delicious. My regular listeners, you guys smell pretty good. But my Patreon supporters, you guys smell so delicious. You smell like a fresh-baked, honey-baked ham. And I want to thank you all individually, starting with Jordan Maloney. And moving on to Shelby Wheeler. Thank you to Shauna. Thank you to Seth Godwin, to Rebecca Handy, to Marty Abernathy, to Kimberly Newell. Thank you to Allie McDowell, to Mindy Carrier. Thank you to Christy Knapp, to Heather Aranda, to Crystal Lurvy. Thank you to Shalane Lane, to Leslie Gettinger, and to August Reed. Thank you guys so much for taking the time out of your day to support me. Thank you for joining the family. Thank you for joining this little community that I'm trying to make here on Patreon. I love you guys to death. And for those of you who are listening regularly, thank you for tuning in too. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for your love, support, and attention. Thank you so much for listening in. And with that being said, I'd like to take you back to our regularly scheduled slice of ham right now.
I love the funk. My voice right now, if you can't tell, is a little strained because yesterday I screamed a lot. So if I try to talk like I'm exaggerating that on purpose, but it my voice is not at my best. So I apologize if my voice isn't seeming at its best right now. I screamed a lot. Why is my computer opening Microsoft Office? Fuck off. Fuck Office. Fuck Office. Hi, welcome to A Slice of Ham. How are you? There's a lot that I want to talk about today. There's quite a bit that I want to talk about today. But first, I want to ask you, lovely listener, how are you doing? Are you doing okay? And that's not just me being vapid and being, you know, a stupid influencer. Like, how are you guys? Are you doing great? That's great. I'm glad you're doing great. How are you? Take a moment to evaluate it. Genuinely. Are you doing okay? Do you feel like shit? Are you excited? Are you a little melancholy? Are you depressed? Are you content? Are you just bored? Examine how you feel. I hope that you feel, at the very least, okay. Boy, there's a lot that I want to talk about today. Number one, well, I started a Patreon account recently, and that's been going well. I already have 10 patrons, which I didn't expect to get. I'm just so fucking thrilled that people would be willing to support me at all. I love that. I love that people want to see more. I love that people are enjoying the podcast as it is, enjoying the podcast proper. It warms my heart. 'Cause man, I have been going through some rough patches in my rough patches of pressure in my head where I'm putting way too much pressure on myself. And I'm expecting myself to be at a certain point, and I have to remind myself to stop and smell the roses and appreciate what I have right the fuck in front of me. I have a wonderful listener base. I have a wonderful follower base on TikTok, on Instagram, and especially in this cozy little nugget of entertainment, because not a lot of people know about my podcast yet. I think in total I've gotten like 7,000 plays across all my episodes, which is fine. And obviously I'd like to get more, you know, you want to get more, you want to get as many as you can, but there's something so
It feels like the beginning of my TikTok stuff again. It feels like how fun it felt. It feels organic. It feels interesting. You know, it's a new medium to explore.
Where's my water? I want water.
What the fuck is wrong with you? I have a lot of moments like that where I do something dumb and then I catch myself and I'm like, who raised you? What color was the barn you were raised in, motherfucker? I've been trying to advertise my podcast and my Patreon, mainly my podcast, on TikTok. All I've been doing is posting like screen recordings of the actual episodes when they're done, and it's only an audio medium, so that doesn't really, it only goes to like the followers who really pay attention, and even then TikTok doesn't really boost that. But I don't blame TikTok for not boosting the podcast content. The Patreon content, that was kind of flaw when they tried to fuck me on that, because I posted my Patreon link in the comments. I posted my own Patreon link in the TikTok comments, and they banned me from commenting for 2 days. It was actually 3 days. I'm going to burp.
Bark.
Bark. They banned me from commenting for 3 fucking days. Or maybe it was 2 days and I was just exaggerating in my, or making it seem longer in my head. But it was very frustrating to me. It was like community guidelines violation. You can't comment now. And I was just like, oh, all right, for posting my own Patreon link. It was very frustrating. And TikTok is, I feel like TikTok is going through some growing pains. It's going through its weird, like, Vine era growing pains that I think it's needs to get its shit together. Number one, it needs to pay its creators better, because there's a lot of people, not just me, but there are a lot of people on the creator fund that really bust their ass to bring content, and we don't get paid that much compared to YouTube. You know, if it when the budgets came out and when we found out that TikTok was making the same amount of money, like similar amount of money that YouTube was making, but not paying its creators nearly the same amount, that's a discrepancy that needs to be addressed. And they also need to start the community guidelines stuff. The fucking weird bans that they're giving people. I mean, I've been on the lighter end of it. I've only gotten like maybe a couple here and there, but they've been some of them. I mean, there have been a couple comments that I've made that I get it. They're a little sus, but other times it's been completely out of nowhere. You know, I posted a link to a Twitter feed because I was doing bot scripts, like scripts written by a robot, and I was reading them on this microphone, and I was trying to cite my sources, basically, like tell people where I got the content from, and then they banned me because I posted a link to a Twitter feed. And then I posted the link to my own Patreon, and then I got banned. So I guess you can't post links to your own shit in the comments. You can't post online links or something. But it would have been nice to know that, because nowhere in the community guidelines does it say that you can't do that. And we read them. Me and my girlfriend, we read them. It's just frustrating, but I've been on the lighter end of it, and I don't like to complain, because I'm lucky enough to have the platform that I have, and I'm lucky enough to be able to do what I do. So complaining about it just seems very disingenuous to me, but I know that it isn't, because these concerns are valid when it comes from a creator standpoint. And there are so many other creators that have been outright fucking banned for no reason. My good friend Triss got his whole account banned. For absolutely no reason. And they can, you know, misconstrue it as like, oh, community guidelines, yada yada, mar mar mar. I don't know why. Because his content didn't fit the content that they want to push out as TikTok? I don't know. But to just, like that, take away somebody's platform. 750,000 followers he had. and now then it's just gone. To have that just be ripped from you is jarring, to say the least. It can be freeing, but it's jarring as fuck, I bet. So yeah, that's the TikTok frustrations that I've been dealing with, you know, just putting too much pressure on myself in terms of the view count, and then TikTok banning me for that shit, from commenting, for putting my own link. That was just like, all right, whatever. Later, bitch. So I just didn't post for a day. But, you know, my girlfriend has been telling me, and she is my saving grace in life, because if not for her, I probably would have unalived myself by now. Not really, but I would have definitely been in a worse place. We all like to make these jokes like, oh, I would have killed myself. Because she went through a rough patch in April, like right around Earth Day, when close family member of hers, like somebody that she loved dearly. Family member, not in terms of like a blood family member, but somebody that she considered family, somebody that was super close to her, passed away. And it was rough. And she says, I would have killed myself if you weren't here for me. And I'm like, oh, bullshit. Whatever. Bullshit. That's not true. You would have been fine. It would have been rough, but you would have been alive. And me too, but it's just easy to hyperbolically, I would have killed myself. Blah, blah, blah. But without her, I definitely would not be on the right track in terms of my perception of myself, my mental health. She is doing a wonderful job at, you know, rubbing my shoulder and saying, hey, stop being so mean to yourself. You are worthy of love. You deserve good things. And I appreciate that. So there have been moments where I'm like, oh, the view count, I'm not getting enough traction. They're not letting me advertise my podcast. They're not letting me advertise my stuff. And she's just like, slow and steady wins the race. You got to appreciate what you have. It's easy to get caught up in the bullshit of social media. It is so easy to get caught up in it. It's so easy to get caught up in it. And I did not, I don't think I was prepared for that. I don't think I was prepared for the weight that you put to your views. But I'm working on that. It's just, she constantly has to remind me, you know, it's peaks and valleys, it ebbs and flows. But for some reason, my brain doesn't let me see past, like, I think something bad happens, and I think it's going to be forever. And that's my problem that I have to sort out. But she does a wonderful job at just gently reminding me that I'm on the right track. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that greatly. So it's the same thing with TikTok and Patreon and the podcast and everything that I'm doing. She's like, you're on the right track. Look at what you've got. Just don't worry about it being a slow start. Just, you'll get there. And I've already got 10 patrons. And I'm happy with that. I genuinely am. Got a big smile on my face because I never thought that I would even get one, much less 10. And to have it hit that milestone, that, I don't want to cry because I don't want stuffy nose, filled me with warmth, warmed my heart. It really did. So thank you. So yeah, TikTok, I'm gonna punch you in the face. What else has been going on? What else did I want to talk about before I talk about what I wanted to talk about? What the fuck? Okay, so some sad news. It turns out that the United States has had 1 in 500 people die from the coronavirus. 1 out of every 500 people have died from the coronavirus. I know two of them. Oh my God. I know two of them. Jesus Christ. I'm looking at the news right now just because I like to read through Reddit news. I like to go through other sources. I like to scroll through Google News just to find out the weird stuff. Keep myself informed a little bit. Go to the weird oddity sites and then find out what's actually going on. 1 in 500 people have died from coronavirus. That fucking sucks. But I'm glad to be vaccinated. If you're listening to this and you're not vaccinated, go fucking get vaccinated. I feel very bad. It breaks my heart to see people staunchly object getting the vaccine. Basically not even believe that COVID exists, but even if you do believe it exists, if they don't get the vaccine, they're dying. There is a subreddit called R. Herman Cain Award of people that have publicly posted, like, fuck the coronavirus, fuck the vaccine, I'm not going to get it, I'm not going to wear the mask. And then they die. And then you see on their Facebook, this is their wife, this is their husband, this is their family, blah, blah, blah. They passed away in the morning. Prayers, prayers, prayers. And it breaks my heart because it's so preventable. It's so preventable. I mean, these vaccines are effective. If you do not believe, you have got to do more research. You've got to do more research. And the people that don't believe in vaccines, the staunch anti-vaxxers, like the anti-vaxxers that foam at the mouth, the ones that are really angry, the ones that yell, will be the first ones to tell you to do your research. The ones that are taking tubes of ivermectin will tell you to do your research. Think for yourself. Are you shitting in my mouth right now? Please get the vaccine. This has to fucking end. I'd like to think that my follower base is very progressive. But I've seen some not so progressive types that are very into what I do. And I think, like, if you, like, do you know who I am? Do you know me at all? Like, are you just, I don't know what, are you projecting onto me, or are you really into what I provide? Cause I'm very flamboyant. I wear a lot of pink. I fucking cry a lot. I am very, very left leaning in my views. Go get an abortion, get a vaccine, get them both. Your body, your choice. I don't mind. Like, the Texas abortion stuff has been making it very hard for me to admit that I have moved to Texas now. It's the people and the culture of Texas that make it easy for me to say that I've moved. But just like Florida, the leadership is very, very backwards. That's why moving to Texas, it was very, I mean, I've lived here for like 7 months now, but now that I've moved here properly, I've been here, you know, this whole time. It's not that much different. And Texas is a fucking beautiful state. Texas is a beautiful state. Texas is rich in history and culture. Florida is a beautiful state, rich in history and culture. There's a lot to do in Texas and Florida. However, the people who run it are fucking dopes. The Texas abortion bill, as a man, you know, I don't really get a say in the abortion debate, because I'm not going to have an abortion. That's not up to me, you know? And of course, if I were ever in a situation, you know, where, you know, I was with a partner and we had to get one, I would like to think that I would have at least a say, but the majority of the say goes to the woman, because she's the one that's carrying the baby, she's the one that's going to have to take it to term, and she's the one that's going to have to go through that traumatic experience of getting an abortion. And trigger warning, sorry, I should have said that before. I didn't expect to be talking about this. I've never It's just like, it just seems so weird to care about what women do. And the debate is, life begins at conception. It begins at a certain point. I don't know when it does. But that's not up to me to decide. If a woman wants to make that choice, that is the woman's choice. That is their choice. That is the entity who is carrying that child. It is their choice to make. I have nothing to do with it, you know? Unless I directly had something to do with the creation of that child, I get like a 30% say, at least in my eyes. And, you know, some people might disagree. This is just my personal opinion, but it's mostly the woman's choice. And if you didn't have a say in making that baby, shut the fuck up. You don't have a say at all. My opinion, of course, but I don't have a say in anybody else's reproductive rights, except to show my support. That's the only say that I have. So I'm looking through the news right now, just figuring out what I want to talk about. I see the Texas COVID-19 death toll has passed 60,000 people, which is not good. I wonder what the Florida one is. What the fuck? Manny Pacquiao is running for president in the Philippines. Doesn't he, like, really not like gay people? Isn't he incredibly homophobic? Should he control the military? I don't know. The homophobic stuff, that gives me pause. India breaks the world record by vaccinating 25 million people in a single day. I'm just reading headlines at this point. I do kind of want to go into that Manny Pacquiao one, but I do want to talk about the Gabby Petito case. And I love that we're now calling it the Gabby Petito case. Let's err on the side of this girl is still alive. Let's hope. If you do not know, if you live under a rock or if you are not familiar, there's a story going around right now of a woman by the name of Gabrielle Petito. Gabby Petito is an American woman from New York, Suffolk County, who was reported missing on September 11th, 2021, while traveling across the United States with her fiancé. She's like a backpacking travel influencer. And she and her fiancé, Brian Laundrie, went on this cross-country trip. And then Brian came home, but Gabby did not. And Gabby is still missing right now. So people are wondering, like, where is she? Where is she? Where is she? Where is she? I hope that she is still alive. I hope that she is still out there somewhere. But, I mean, it is now 8 days after the fact, on the day that I am recording this, on the 19th of September. And she was left, like, near Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming. So she's out in nature, out by rock formations. If she doesn't have water, she's not going to be doing very well. So it's not looking so good, realistically. And then Brian Laundrie, so he comes home without her. And people start asking him, hey, dude, the fuck? Where is Gabby? Where is Gabby? Where is Gabby? Where is Gabby? Oh my God, no, she was reported missing on September 11th. but he came back to Florida with the van on September 1st. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. And it seems like all communication was cut off from Petito's phone, from her to her mother on August 30th. So she's been missing since August 30th. So it's a lot longer. She's been missing for the better part of a month now. So it's clearly not looking good. Brian comes back, says nothing to anybody. And people are asking him, where the fuck is Gabby? And then on September 17th, he gets reported missing. People report, his family and his lawyer team reports that he has disappeared. So now Brian Laundry has disappeared. Gabby Petito is still missing. And I was just saying this last night to my girlfriend. We were talking about it. I was like, he has given himself, like, by him not speaking to the police. And it, what the fuck? These are the most suspicious circumstances. And I know that there's not a lot of evidence to arrest him for her disappearance or her murder. They should have figured out a way to detain him or something. They should have figured out a way to press harder. They should have hammered him. They should have hammered this boy. Because now he has gotten... He gave himself such a head start. If he did this, if he had something to do with her disappearance and, God forbid, her death, he's given himself a very good head start. And, what the fuck were the police doing? Were they just chilling? I'm not sure what the police were doing here, but it seems like they have bungled this severely. I think a lot of people are mad at the police as well. I mean, I bet the Petitos are really, really pissed right now. I think that Brian knows where she is. I think that maybe his family knows. But I can't, this is all speculation, you know? The way that things are going, he came back home, he visited his family in Florida, he visited with a lawyer with his family, and then he disappears. So any true crime aficionado will take a look at this and go, oh, he talked with his lawyer, he talked with his family, he said his goodbyes, and now he's on the lam. Allegedly.
Allegedly!
It's alleged, of course. This is all speculation, it's all circumstantial. He's just straight up not speaking to police, and I hope... Oh, man. I hope she's alive. I hope she is somewhere. But at this stage of the game, it's not looking very good. You have to think realistically at some point. But a little part of me is hoping. So that's been the developments. 2 days ago, he went missing, and now we don't know where he is, and now we still don't know where Gabby is. They had, a domestic dispute back in, the middle of August. You know, they had a domestic dispute that resulted in a roadside stop. A witness called 911. They claimed that they were fighting near some community co-op over a phone. Laundry got back into the van. Petito struck Laundry in the arm before trying to climb in through the driver's side window. When responding police arrived, they had to pull the van over near the entrance to the Arches National Park and found Petito crying heavily in the passenger seat, and she told officers she was struggling with her mental health. The responding officer wrote in his report that at no point in my investigation did Gabrielle stop crying, breathing heavily, or compose a sentence without needing to wipe away tears, wipe her nose, or rub her knees with her hands. She was not in a good spot. I mean, she was probably panicked as fuck. Something's up. I guess Brian stated that they began arguing in town, emotional tension that had been building due to the two of them traveling together for 4 to 5 weeks, resulting in an increase of arguments. She was concerned that he would leave her alone, stranded in town, after he got in the van. Jesus Christ. I know that there was a video floating around of this domestic dispute. There's body cam footage, but I didn't want to watch it because it kind of... Something about it made me itch. Hey, everyone. Quick sidebar. The way that I record these podcasts is pretty sporadic. I like to try to get them on a set schedule. Like, obviously, Mondays are the reading ones. And then sometime between Thursday and Saturday at the latest, to post these regular ones. And so when I was recording this one, sometimes I'll record a little bit and then I'll put it down for a little while and then come back to it. Sometimes I'll come back to it a couple days later. And that's what I did with this one. I recorded the news first. I was looking through the current events, and then I waited like 3 days to record this portion. Right now it's September 22nd. And like, I was talking about the Gabby Petito case and I was like, I hope she's alive. And then like a day after I recorded that, she was found dead. They found remains, and then they confirmed that it was actually Gabby Petito. So the worst has been confirmed. And I was actually doing some thinking. The only reason that I got caught up in the Gabby Petito case is because I read about everybody else getting caught up. I was like, well, why is everyone talking about this person? I think my girlfriend brought it up to me, actually. And then I just started following the hype. There are so many more missing people out there. There are 500 missing children that were taken by ICE. There are, I mean, the missing First Nations children, the missing and murdered Indigenous women. There are a lot of missing cases, and I'm wondering why this one in particular captured the hearts and minds of so many people. And obviously there's a bit of missing white woman syndrome in there, but is it because there's a story? And I don't mean that there's not a story in any other missing case, because there's no matter what, if there's a missing person, there's a story. But I mean a story in terms of a media lens. I'm not talking about a story in terms of a human perspective. I'm talking about a story in terms of like the news or the internet media. Like, yeah, that's great that there's missing women, but what's the story? What's the angle? What's the catch? And this particular case, I mean, they went on a little trip. He came back alone. He wasn't saying anything. And then he went missing. And then, So everybody can speculate and draw their own conclusions as to what happened because they have a lot of clues. But there might be some other missing persons cases where there's no answers whatsoever apart from the person disappeared. And that doesn't really make for good screen time on the news. Unfortunately, that is the reality of a lot of outlets. It's just so surreal that this might be the first case, but I don't know. It's the first case in recent memory that I can remember following like that. Not obsessively following, because there's another case that I've been obsessively following over time. That's the Robert Durst case. But this one, I just kept tabs on it to see if she came back home alive, and the worst happened. So as of now, her fiance is still missing. He gave himself a great head start, so good job, police. And my heart goes out to the family. And that seems like a very vapid thing to say, but there's not much else that you can say other than, you know, if anybody were to go through a loss like this, there's not much you can say other than, I'm sorry, and that's horrible. That's god-awful. That sucks. So just thought I'd mention that. That was a weird development as I was recording. Okay, back to the show.
Boy, boy, boy. That's very sad. That's very sad, and I do not like it. That's very sad, and I do not like it. I hope that it turns out okay. But I don't know what's going to happen. Anyway, what else is in the news? Oh my God. Robert Durst was found guilty of the murder of Susan Berman. Holy shit! I can't fucking believe that. I cannot fucking believe that happened. I'm dead ass. My ass is dead. My ass is straight up dead. You hear my tummy? Is hungry. For those of you who don't know who Robert Durst is, I'm going to do a full episode on Robert Durst and his crimes and all the shit that happened. It's crazy. But there's a wonderful documentary series called The Jinx, the life and deaths of Robert Durst, which is required watching if you're a true crime aficionado. It's, I think, where I started diving into true crime as heavily as I did. Because initially, before I watched The Jinx, I was just interested in serial killers in passing. You know, John Wayne Gacy, Ted Bundy, Richard Ramirez, all the A-listers. But then watching The Jinx, that was one of the single most shocking true crime experiences it's one of the most shocking things I've ever watched. The last episode of that bitch, oh my God, the last episode of that fucking show is one of the most shocking pieces of media I have ever seen in my life. And I am not exaggerating. And especially now that the outcome of the case has become what it has become, because evidence that they discovered in the documentary series led to his conviction. But we'll get into that later. What do I want to get into today, though? There's a specific topic that I want to talk about today. And it's very specific. It's very specific. Specifically, it is specific. Can you tell I ran out of words in the middle of my sentence? I remember reading about this next topic that I'm going to cover and being fascinated, like, how the fuck, how did this happen? It's a tale. It really is a tale of buffoonery, of negligence, it's a tale of corporate negligence and small town buffoonery coming together to poison an entire town. And when I say poison an entire town, I don't mean like, oh, they're building a new pool hall over there across the street. They're going to poison the youth. That's a problem when the kids play pool. That was a real, like, crisis in America at some point. Like, oh, all these pool halls are going to turn our kids into criminals. All these pool halls are going to turn our kids gay. You know, Alex Jones. There's something about the pool halls being built. Pool halls are being built all across America right now. I understand that there's an influx of pool halls that are being built across the southern border of Texas and Mexico, and they're trying to use those pool halls to get more recruits to do their demonic work. Alex Jones is my biological father. And I want to say that for the record right now. Alex Jones is my biological dad. Hi, Dad. How are you? It's nice to meet you. I'm following in your footsteps and finally doing a podcast like you've always wanted me to. It's only a matter of time before I start screaming and shouting and foaming at the mouth, just like my big old papa. So I thank you for giving me all your support. Thanks for giving me advice.
Thank you for showing me your love, and thank you for telling me all about the demons that are in the Obama's skin, in Hillary's skin. Alex Jones literally thinks that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are demons from hell. Why do people listen to him? And I have a feeling that a lot of people who listen to him are listening to him just because it's like, haha, funny. But there's also a genuine listener base that he has that are eating up every word that he fucking says. And I don't like that. I don't like that. Anyway, the tale that I want to tell you about today is a tale of corporate negligence mishmashed with fucking small town bumbling. This is the story of how a town was poisoned, about how a town was literally made uninhabitable. This is the story of Times Beach, Missouri. Hey, everybody out there in podcast world, it's Casey Hamilton from A Slice of Ham, and I just want to let you know that I went ahead and bit the bullet and made a Patreon account for this podcast. I was initially very worried, I convinced myself that people weren't going to sign up for it anyway. What do I have to offer? What extra stuff can I do? Blah, 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 this and that. And I thought long and hard about the tiers, and I think that I have something that you guys would enjoy. There's something out there for everybody. There's something out there for anyone at whatever level that they want to listen to me at. So if you would like to support the show, if you'd like to help me achieve my dream of doing this full time, then support my Patreon page. It's patreon.com/aSliceOfHam. That's patreon.com/aSliceOfHam. You can also look up A Slice of Ham on Google and search Patreon there, or you can go to my TikTok account, my Beacons page, my Instagram. There's a link all throughout each of those social media sites. So if you want to support me, I thank you, thank you, thank you highly. And if you don't have the money to support me and you just want to listen anyway, thank you, because I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you listening. I wouldn't be here if you weren't for you tuning in. So if you don't have any money to give, but you still want to listen to support, I appreciate that. But if you do have some money that you would like to spare and help me support my dream of doing this full time, then you are more than welcome to, and I highly appreciate it. That's patreon.com/aSliceOfHam. Hope to see you there. So Times Beach, Missouri. Times Beach, Missouri is one of the more interesting topics that I've stumbled across, and it was one of those topics that I stumbled across in one of my Wikipedia binges, because I go on a lot of Wikipedia binges. I'll just go through random articles and learn about shit. And this was one of the weird things that I learned about. If you scroll down to the bottom of articles, like let's say you're on an article about like a dead kid, a kid who was murdered in a weird and novel way, you'll scroll down all the way to the bottom of the Wikipedia page and it'll be like list of murdered children. And then you're like, what? How do you have a list like that? And then it's like 1900, 1910, 1920, 1930, and it goes all the way through like all these murdered children. There are some morbid articles out there. And one of the articles that I found was, I was researching something, and then I see also Times Beach, Missouri. And I'm like, that's weird. Let me read about it. And boy, oh boy, is it one of the fucking most fascinating stories that I have ever come across in terms of, I mean, it's not really a true crime story, but it is. It plays out like one. It absolutely plays out like one. So I want to tell you about the time when the time when a town got poisoned. Time when a town was made uninhabitable because companies worked together to dispose of their waste in shitty ways. And they left it up to the care of a bumblefuck in town. So let's listen to the story of Times Beach, Missouri. Yay! All right, so Times Beach, Missouri. I remember when I looked up this case, this story, whenever I was just doing my normal Wikipedia searching, and then I discovered this like weird fucking case of a poisoned town. And I was like, how do you poison a whole town? And then I looked into the story, and it's very much a story of corporate greed, of corporate negligence, and of small town buffoonery. So let's get into this. What was Times Beach, Missouri? It's not a town anymore. The only remnants of Times Beach, Missouri that you can find are just a plaque in the Route 66 State Park Memorial. There's a wonderful video. What's his name? Austin McConnell, I think, did a video on this a couple years ago. Very, very good. Very concise. All right, so what happened in this town? Basically, Times Beach, Missouri. It's a ghost town in St. Louis County, Missouri. It's about 17 miles southeast of St. Louis, 2 miles east of Eureka, Missouri. It used to be home to a little more than 2,000 people. So it's a tiny town. It's a small town. Even the town where I was born was not as small as that. So it's a tight-knit community for sure. Once home to more than 2,000 people, the town was eventually completely evacuated and incinerated in 1983 due to something called TCDD, which is also known as dioxin. The town was poisoned with something called dioxin, a full dioxin contamination. It was the largest civilian exposure to dioxin in the history of the United States. At one point, Times Beach, Missouri accounted for more than 50% of all the dioxin in the state of Missouri. And you're probably listening like, Hammy, what the fuck? What is dioxin? Why are you not explaining this to me? And I will. This is definitely going to be an episode that's a little bit chemical name heavy. There's going to be like 3 times where I mention chemical names. I'm going to be sure to explain it in detail. It's not going to be too confusing. The main thing that I want you to remember is the word dioxin. D-I-O-X-I-N. It has the X in there. And that's how you know it's dangerous. It feels scary. All right. So before the contamination, all the way back in 1925... Times Beach, Missouri was founded. Founded in 1925 on the floodplain of the Merrimack River. And I don't know what a floodplain is, so I'm going to Google that right now. I'm going to burp. I am disgusting. Oh, I'm a fucking filth goblin. I'm a fucking pig wizard. A floodplain, or bottomlands, is an area of land adjacent to a river, right next to a river, which stretches from the banks of its channel to the base of the enclosing valley walls, and which experiences flooding during periods of high discharge. So if it rains a lot, the floodplain is going to get flooded. You know, it's a place for the river to kind of fill up as it rains too hard. And that's what they built the town on. Fuck. Oh, man. What's weird about this town is that it was a company town. It's actually a company town. And, you know, there was a report that Amazon is trying to build these company towns, these factory towns with, like, houses that their workers can stay in and shit. That is not that's not a new idea. It's a very old idea. Company towns were huge in olden days. And Times Beach, Missouri was no exception. It was actually founded by a newspaper. The St. Louis Star-Times newspaper. And you could go to Times Beach, Missouri and purchase a 20-foot by 100-foot lot of land for $67.50 fucking cents. And you could also get a 6-month newspaper subscription to the St. Louis Star-Times. So you could buy a house and get a subscription. They were selling houses and newspapers as a package deal. Which makes me mad that I, you know how, goddamn, I see episodes of like Hoarders and I see people fucking up their houses. And I'm like, I would love to have a house to fuck up. I would love to be able to buy a house to fuck. And these people are saying, like, I bought this house and blah, 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 and this and that, and this is when I bought it, and I wanted an investment. And I'm like, I'd like to buy a house, but
old people screwed it up for everybody.
No, it'll be all right. I'm sure the market will crash, but it's definitely not, it ain't as easy as $6,750 for a fucking plot of land, that's for sure. It was meant for summer homes. It was meant to be a resort town. They were trying to spruce it up and bring in a lot of tourism. And it boomed in the early years. It did very well. But then a couple of things happened to kind of slow that growth. Number one was the Great Depression. So that'll do it. The worst period of economic decline in recent memory. Although we're getting pretty fucking close nowadays. You know,
the Great Depression, more like go fuck yourself.
What? The Great Depression combined with, you know, them having to ration gasoline during World War II, it kind of reduced the feasibility of summer homes. People were not concerned about buying a summer house when they have to save their gasoline because of the war, and when there's so much dust flying everywhere in the goddamn Dust Bowl and nobody can eat because we're in the Great Depression. So, not very good. So, eventually the town became a community of mostly low-income housing with that small population. By 1970, it had a population of around 1,200, about 1,250 people. And in the years immediately before its evacuation, it kind of became, getting up to a lower middle class town. But most of the time for its run as a town, it was low income housing. There was a grocery store and a gas station, but that was it. The roads were not paved. It was prone to flooding throughout its entire history. The first buildings that were built in Times Beach, Missouri were built on stilts. So it was a town that had a lot of hype propped up against it that did not, it didn't work. It didn't live up to the hype for sure. All right. So we have this town. It's pretty poor, pretty small. Roads are not paved. It's got a gas station. Cool. It's got a little grocery store, a little corner store. That's great. It's a nice little cozy place for the lower class people to live. For the lower class people of that particular area or that particular time or whoever was drifting through that wanted to settle there. That's what they did. All right. So we've talked about Times Beach, its early inception. Now what I want to do is go 3.5 hours away from Times Beach to a city called Verona, Missouri. Now, Verona is important to mention because this is where the trouble starts. Here's where all the trouble started. So in Verona, Missouri, there is a chemical facility. Or there was a chemical facility. So around this time, let's speak in the present. Let's say that we're in 1980. We're back then. There's a chemical facility in Verona, In Verona, Missouri, there's a chemical facility owned by a company called Hoffman Taff. Now, Hoffman Taff was contracted by the U.S. military to make a pesticide, a chemical 245T, which was a pesticide, which, if you combined it with pesticide 24D, you get what's called Agent Orange. And the U.S. military loved the use of Agent Orange, especially during the Vietnam War. You know, war is hell, but I'll tell you who it's not hell for is private contractors. Private contractors, people who, you know, put together, like the chemical Hoffman Taff made a lot of money making Agent Orange, which was a horrible, horrible chemical. If you don't know what Agent Orange is, it's an herbicide. It's a plant killer. And it was used during the Vietnam War. They put it in planes and they sprayed it over the jungles to literally kill the jungles so that they would have open areas to fight in, so that they wouldn't be able to hide in the jungles, the enemy, rather. They decimated their area, but it also had a terrible side effect. People that came in contact with Agent Orange, it caused horrible health problems, but especially in their children. Offspring of people who were affected by Agent Orange came out horrifically deformed. Like missing limbs, missing arms, with, you know, different extremities. It's, if you Google Agent Orange deformities, it will, it's not good. It's not good. And we, as a country, we completely sanctioned the use of that. The production of Agent Orange, the production of those pesticides, pesticide 2,4-D and 2,4-T, whatever, they leave behind toxic waste. And among that waste is dioxin. Now, what is dioxin? Dioxin is, it seems, dioxin, scary, boo. It seems like a scary word, but what it really is, it's a group of, it could be any number of things that are related to a specific group. Dioxins are a group of chemically related compounds that are persistent environmental pollutants. They're found throughout the world in the environment, and they accumulate in the food chain, sometimes in the fatty tissue of animals, but especially in these manufactured chemical processes. Dioxins are highly toxic and can cause reproductive issues, developmental problems, damage to the immune system, and they can interfere with your hormone production and can also cause cancer. So it's not good. It's not good. Not good at all. It's part of the quote-unquote dirty dozen of environmental pollutants. Dangerous chemicals that are known as persistent organic pollutants, or POPs. They have a highly toxic potential. The Times Beach, Missouri is one of the biggest, it's probably the biggest dioxin contamination event. So Hoffman Taff, they're producing this pesticide. They're producing it for the production of Agent Orange. And because this process produces dioxin waste, they have this big vat. They have this big old tub, you know, partially full of this dioxin runoff residue. It creates like these still bottoms of dioxin that they just chucked into a big tank. And so eventually, Hoffman Taff, they had that facility, but then the Vietnam War ended. Hoffman Taff eventually got taken over in 1972, but before it got taken over, they started leasing their building to a different company. They stopped using their facility, and so they were like, well, we have the facility, we want to make money, let's charge another company to use it. So that's exactly what they did. And so another company comes in, starts using their facility, a company called NEPACO. The Northeastern Pharmaceutical and Chemical Company, NEPACCO, NEPACO. Now, NEPACO produced a chemical called hexachlorophene. Now, hexachlorophene was a chemical at the time used as an antibacterial agent in soaps, toothpaste, and other household disinfectants. Here's the thing. Hexachlorophene is also highly toxic. It's highly toxic, especially to babies, but it's toxic to humans as well. There was an incident in France where 39 babies were killed because they got exposed to high levels of hexachlorophene in a brand of baby powder, Bebe baby powder. So eventually hexachlorophene was, you know, banned. But before that, NEPACO was producing hexachlorophene. I mean, this is the 70s. This is the early 70s, late 60s when this first started. So, like it or not, they didn't really know what the fuck they were doing when it came to toxic waste. They only had a little idea. So there's not going to be like protocols for how to get rid of it or protocols for how to handle it safely. They're just sort of making things up as they go along. It wasn't until, I think, close to the 80s, maybe 1980, that they started really getting into reform for how to clean this shit up, how to prevent these spills from happening again. So the production of hexachlorophene also produces dioxin runoff waste. So NEPACO just started dumping their dioxin runoff into the Hoffman-Taff dioxin runoff tank. They already had a tank full of dioxin, so they're like, we'll just use that. Then a problem arose. The tank filled up. So what do you do at that point? Now you have a gigantic thousands of gallons, tens of thousands of gallons worth of dioxin runoff waste that you now have to get rid of safely. What's the safe way to get rid of dioxin runoff waste? The safe way to get rid of it is to incinerate it. But that's also a very, very expensive way to get rid of it. Oh, you know what's a cheaper way to get rid of it? And we'll just pay another company to do it. I don't feel like doing it. You do it. It's like when you pay somebody else to do your homework for you. That's exactly what NEPACO did. NEPACO cheaped out, and they looked for the lowest bidder. And that lowest bidder was the Independent Petrochemical Corporation, or IPC. However, IPC then subcontracted their own lowest bidder, a man named Russell Martin Bliss. So to get this straight, Hoffman-Taff owned that facility first, and then they started contracting it to NEPACO. NEPACO was also making stuff that had dioxin runoff attached to it, so they started dumping it in their tank. The tank got full. So NEPACO then contracted IPC, the Independent Petrochemical Corporation, to get rid of their dioxin waste for them. Here, you guys take it, and you deal with it. And then, and I think this is the dirtiest part. This right here. The Independent Petrochemical Company, I think, is the reason for all this bullshit. Because they decided to pull a fast one on everyone. They subcontracted their own stuff to the lowest bidder, Russell Bliss, who was just a dude who lived in town. He owned a small waste oil business. He got rid of people's waste oil, motor oil, and so they were like, you do it. So the Independent Petrochemical Company, IPC, charged NEPACO. NEPACO said, okay, we'll give you $3,000 per load. So every load of dioxin that you take off, we'll give you $3,000 for. But then IPC told Russell Bliss that for every load that he takes, they're only going to give him $125. So the IPC is keeping $2,750 for themselves. $2,850, rather. Excuse me, my math. And they're giving only $125 per load to Russell Bliss. So IPC is skimming money off the top. Russell Bliss collected 6 truckloads of dioxin runoff waste, which turned out to be 18,500 gallons. Now the question is, did the Independent Petrochemical Corporation tell Russell Bliss what he would be hauling? My guess is, fuck no, they didn't. They didn't fucking tell him. They didn't tell him how to handle it safely. They didn't tell him that it was dioxin, that it was toxic, that it had to be incinerated, that you couldn't fuck with it like that. They didn't say anything. They told him waste oil. And there are other interviews with Russell Bliss where he was very apologetic after all this came out because he didn't know. And I really do think that he didn't know, but still, what a fucking nightmare to be involved in. There's footage of him at conferences, like press conferences, like, I'm sorry, I did not know that anything would, I still do not know what it does. You could tell me that it was a new type of jam right now, and I'd put it on toast and eat it. At one point, they were telling him that they were making ladies' face cleanser at the facility, and that's why they had this runoff waste, because they were making ladies' face cleanser, not a fucking pesticide that deforms people. So, not good. So what did Russell Bliss do? Why, what the fuck is the, how does this lead to the contamination of the entire town, you know? All right, cool. So now Russell Bliss has all this dioxin runoff waste. So? Who cares?
All right.
Dioxin runoff, when it was, I mean, it was in like these solid discs that he had. And he had the gallon waste in liquid form. He had the runoff waste, and then he also had these still bottoms that they had. So what he did was he took the waste and the still bottoms, and he chucked them into his own oil supply. He already had a big vat full of runoff waste oil that he took care of, and so he just added it to his own supply, because dioxin dissolves in motor oil. So he was just like, I'll chuck it in there. And that's what he did. It dissolved into his own supply. And now Russell Bliss has this vat of waste oil, motor oil, and dioxin toxic waste. So what did Russell Bliss do with all this fucking old motor oil? The thing about living in a small town with unpaved roads and all this dust kicking up everywhere, I mean, you live in the South, you live among ranches, he has a lot of horse stables nearby, there's going to be a lot of dust. The dust doesn't, it's not conducive for humans to breathe it in, it's not good for animals to breathe it in, it's not good for, you know, crops or anything. So what Russell Bliss would do is he would go to horse stables, he would go to horse arenas, and he would spray the ground with the motor oil. He did it to his own stable with his own motor oil supply before he put the dioxin in, because he'd been doing it all his life. He'd been doing it because it takes, you're not just a one and done spray. You spray it, you come back after a couple months, you spray it again so the dust doesn't kick up. And it's remarkable how well it worked. It wasn't bad for the horses, it wasn't bad for the animals because they weren't down there eating the shit. And it kept the dust from kicking up. So, other people in the town saw how well it worked. They were like, hey, that's pretty fucking great. I got a horse stable over here. Why don't you do that to my stable? And so they paid Russell Bliss to come and spray their stables, to come and spray their horse arenas. So, that's exactly what Russell Bliss did. On May 26th, 1971... Russell Bliss went over to the Shenandoah Stable, which is near Moscow Mills in Missouri. It was owned by Judy Piott and Frank Hampel, and they paid him $150 to spray 2,000 gallons worth of his motor oil on their stables to keep the dust from kicking up. When he sprays this oil, it's unusually thick. It's really sludgy, and it smells like it's fucking burning. It's really weird. So Russell sprays it, he goes, okay, thanks for the money, and then he leaves. Within a few days, birds start dying. They start dropping from the rafters of the stables. Then, horses start developing sores and losing their hair. Then, within a couple months, like, the Frank and Judy were like, what the fuck is happening? They removed the first, like, 6 inches of soil. They removed the first top layer. And then it still kept happening, so they removed another 12 inches, another foot of soil, and had it disposed at a landfill. But still, it didn't help. After a few months, 62 horses died or had to be euthanized because they were so emaciated. And the family itself, Judith and Judy and Frank and their two kids, they developed headaches, nosebleeds, abdominal pain, and violent diarrhea. All because Russell Bliss sprayed his toxic motor oil laden with dioxin onto the fucking horse stables. Here's the thing about dioxin. It's toxic in humans, but it's even more toxic in animals. Rabbits don't like it. Horses don't like it. Birds don't like it. Animals will die very, very quickly. Cows, if they drink from a river that's a little bit laden in dioxin, they'll fucking drop dead. It's crazy. So you can imagine, like, the horror, the absolute, like, terror that they're feeling. Like, what the fuck? What is happening? And how do we... They've removed 18 inches of dirt, and it's still happening. 62 horses are dying. A month later, at the Timberline Stables in Jefferson City, Russell Bliss is contracted to spray again. Here's the thing about Russell Bliss. Even though he's a bumblefuck that didn't know what he was doing, he didn't know. He did not know... And how could you know? I know, like, ignorance of the law is not an excuse. How the fuck was he supposed to know about any of this? If the companies that were not dealing with this waste did not tell him what to do, they didn't tell him shit. Now, you can play devil's advocate and say, is he lying just to save his ass? We don't know. Who knows? This happened forever ago. I really do think the way that corporations are, I think that they were just like, deal with it, whatever. You know, NEPACO didn't want to deal with it, so they paid someone else, and they didn't want to deal with it, so they paid Russell. And they kept most of the money for themselves. It's a tale of corporate fucking greed. Oh, all because the IPC wanted to skim off the fucking top. Now 62 horses are dead, and at the Timberline Stables, 12 horses are dead, and the children at the farm developed chloracne, which is a common symptom of dioxin poisoning. All right. Then he goes to another horse ranch. He goes to the Bubbling Springs Ranch in St. Louis. He's contracted to spray, and there are the same problems there. However, the owner of the Bubbling Springs stables did not dispose of his soil correctly. The other two arenas, they got rid of their soil. They took a bunch of layers of soil. They got rid of it at a landfill. The people at Bubbling Springs took their soil and just dumped it on a neighbor's property. The owner, Vernon Stout, just took the soil and dumped it onto Harold Minker's yard. So, good luck with that. You deal with it, Harold. What a fucking asshole. What a piece of shit. Ugh. Oh, and the Minker property became a significant point of interest once the CDC got involved. So all the hubbub, all the fucking shit, you know, my horses are dying. There are all these reports. It catches the eye of the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control. They see all these horses. They're like, are we going to have to deal with something? Is this like a new viral infection, you know? I mean, we know all about a fucking pandemic, don't we? So whenever these outbreaks happen, they have to go down and investigate because they don't know if it's going to transfer to humans. They don't know if they're going to have to deal with this weird pandemic. They don't know if this is a viral infection or if it's something contaminating the area. So August 1971, the CDC inspects the stables. They inspect the Shenandoah stables. They take soil samples. They take human blood samples. They take animal blood samples. However, because this is 1971, technology isn't where it needed to be to really figure this shit out yet. And not only that, the technology wasn't where it needed to be. The people didn't really know what to do because they're just now starting to deal with shit like this. Big toxic waste, like cleanup problems, aren't really coming to light until the late 60s, early 70s, because, you know, the industrial revolution, 40s and 50s, there was a huge factory boom. I mean, I'm not the biggest history buff, but we went from farming to more factory-laden work and, you know, more chemical-based work. You know, a lot of these weird chemical processes, like making a pesticide to use in war, creates this weird dioxin runoff. Like, that wasn't going to happen in 1890, but it happened in 1940, and that's only 50 years later. It's not that much time. But even then, they didn't know what the fuck they were doing. So, you know, they've come a long way, but they hadn't come far enough for them to deal with this effectively. So because of this, the results of the soil sample testing, of the blood testing, they don't come back until July 30th, 1974, 3 years later. They find dioxin as high of 30 parts per million. 30 parts per million. Dioxin is harmful to humans at 1 part per billion. Now, 1 part per billion, 1 part dioxin for every billion parts something else, that's a lot. 1 part of dioxin per every million, that's a lot more, because it takes less to fill up that quota. A million is not as much as a billion, so 1 part per million is significantly less of a threshold to hit than 1 part per billion. They didn't know much about dioxin. They didn't know how bad it was at the time. And in 1972, NEPACO fucking went out of business because the FDA banned the use of hexachlorophene. So now, the company that contracted IPC in the first place went out of business. The CDC at that time, they checked out all the findings, they looked at the results, and they said, well, we could clean it up, but we're not going to, because it would be too costly, it would be too pointless, because dioxin, as we have discovered through our research, has a half-life of only 1 year. Now, if you don't know what a half-life is, a half-life in terms of chemicals, in terms of matter, is the time required for a quantity to reduce to half of its initial value. It's the amount of time it takes for something to reduce to half on its own, for it to decay, for like water to evaporate on its own, for just the half-life. So like the half-life of caffeine, for example, is roughly about 5 hours. It takes 5 hours for it. Like you take, let's say you take 30 milligrams of caffeine, it'll take roughly around 5 hours for it to go down to 15. Obviously, that math might be wrong scientifically, but that's just a way for people like me to understand it. The half-life of dioxin is actually 11 years. So that's a problem. With their initial claim of, oh, the half-life of dioxin is 1 year, that means, oh, if we wait half a year, then the dioxin concentration will be half as strong. And then we wait another, you know, quarter year, and it'll be even less strong. So that's the idea. But the problem is the concentration of dioxin in the area was not going to reach like half strength until 5.5 years in. So the people of the town would have to sit at 100% dioxin contamination for 5.5 years until they get some relief, if they just waited on their own. So this is a problem. So 1974 to 1970, like around all this time, like before the EPA gets involved, because they get involved in 1979, the EPA gets involved, and they only got involved when a former NEPACO employee blew the whistle about the burial of toxic waste on a farm near Verona. So the only reason that the Environmental Protection Agency got involved was because someone at NEPACO blew the whistle and said, hey, they were burying toxic waste on a farm. If they didn't blow the whistle, I don't know if they would have figured it out in time. And how disgusting is that? How fucking gross is that when you think of that company, that they were willing to just sweep it under the rug and bury it and leave the people of the fucking town to deal with it? That's why it's like, I hate when I see like, it's World Recycle Day. Everybody turn off your faucets, turn off your lights all day. Make sure you turn off all your lights and unplug your appliances to save energy, to save the planet. How about we hold the fucking corporations accountable? Huh? I don't have the capability to produce 18,000 gallons of dioxin runoff. I don't have 90 barrels of toxic waste sitting in my fucking garage, do I? No, I don't. But you know who did? NEPACO and IPC and eventually Russell fucking Bliss, who they saddled it with. They saddled it with this dude. I feel bad for Russell Bliss because he had to fucking just deal with this shit. He got saddled with this fucking horrible task because the companies just didn't want to deal with it. It was too expensive, and we want to keep the money anyway. It's such a cynical story. It makes me fucking... It pisses me off very much because it's not a private citizen's job to combat all of this environmental turmoil that we're in because we're not the ones doing the bulk of the damage. Me taking like an extra long shower is bad, yes, but it's not what these fucking corporations are doing. It's not burying 90 barrels of toxic waste on a farm in Verona. All of the barrels, mind you, were leaking and corroded and leaking into the fucking soil. 90 barrels of toxic dioxin waste buried on this farm. And the EPA only found out about it because somebody decided to blow the whistle. Thank God for that person. Brave. I have high respect for whistleblowers. Edward Snowden, I have high respect for because it takes a lot of balls to blow the whistle on shit that's not right. And this was not right. And think of the people who are living in the town at this time. Think of the people who are living in the areas where this dioxin contamination is happening. They're getting nosebleeds, diarrhea, all this fucking chloracne, all these problems. Their animals are dying and they don't know why. They don't know why. For all they know, it could be a plague. It could be a fucking supernatural event. All I know is they're probably terrified. And in reality, it's because these companies got lazy? How fucking dare you? How dare you? So, in May and June of 1982, so the EPA got, they heard about it in 1979, they start visiting in 1982. The EPA, they start visiting the affected horse stables. Now, remember when did he sprayed those stables in 1971. He sprayed those stables almost a decade before the EPA got involved and visited the stables. More than a decade before. 11 years before. The EPA visits, and in 1982, the shit hits the fan. So, the EPA visits, and around that same time, this group called the Environmental Defense Fund, which is a public interest group, which I'm going to actually Google them right now because I did not Google them before and I should have. The Environmental Defense Fund, which is still active today, it seems, is a United States-based nonprofit environmental advocacy group. They're known for their work on issues including global warming, ecosystem restoration, oceans, human health, and they advocate using sound science, economics, and law to find environmental solutions that work. It is nonpartisan, and its work often advocates market-based solutions to environmental problems. How fucking awesome are they? Why don't you go be a member? You can join. I'll be a member too, the Environmental Defense Fund. That's great. It sounds like an army. So they published a leaked EPA document, which listed 14 confirmed and 41 possibly contaminated sites in the state of Missouri. This is how the townspeople of Times Beach found out that their town was contaminated. Because the Environmental Defense Fund leaked a document that the EPA did not want to get out. Thank God for the EDF. So, what happened in Times Beach? Why was the town so toxic? Like, yeah, he sprayed the stables, but why did they have to... What led to the evacuation of the town? Not only did Russell Bliss spray the stables, the horse arenas, he also, over the course of 4 years... sprayed 160,000 gallons of the contaminated oil on the unpaved roads of Times Beach, Missouri. All 23 miles of unpaved dirt road. Remember, in the horse stables, when the dust kicks up, it's not good for the animals, it's not good for the people. Well, what happens when a car drives along a dirt road? It leaves a trail of dust all behind it. That can't be good. Hey, Russell, we're the town of Times Beach. We're the committee of Times Beach. We'd like to contract you to spray our roads. And that's exactly what he did. So the townspeople find out about their contaminated town, their contaminated roads, through this document. 14 contaminated sites in the state of 14 confirmed contaminated, 41 possibly. Times Beach was among the 14. So the people living in Times Beach, were they see this document and they go, we've been living here for a fucking decade. We've been living here for a decade with the horse stables like this, and we've been living here with the roads being sprayed for 4 full years, being directly exposed to this dioxin, and you're not telling us this? What the fuck? It's not good. The townspeople were pissed. They were pissed at the CDC, they were pissed at the EPA, and they were pissed at poor old Russell Bliss. They even, I've seen, if you go on YouTube and search Times Beach, Missouri, there's a great, it's almost an hour long documentary with old footage from that time period. And boy, are the people pissed. They are shouting at the fucking town hall meeting. They are pissed at Russell Bliss. There's a shot of a bumper sticker that says "Ignorance is bliss." And it's like someone had to be mad enough to make that and sell that around town. And people were mad enough to buy it. They were pissed at him. They were pissed at everybody. So there's a lot of public pressure mounting at this point. There's just a lot of stuff happening in the background. I mean, I found a documentary about all this hubbub about Times Beach, about all the stuff that was going on. I found it on YouTube. It's got like less than 12,000 views. So I put it on my Patreon. I put it as a public link for anybody who wants to view it. It's on there for, and even if you're not a patron, you can view the link. So if you want to check it out, I figured I would just let it be known that it was there because it's actually so fucking cool. It's full of footage from the time. It's full of old news footage from the Time Beach like era, from when it was all happening. It's got interviews with Russell Bliss, with Judy Piott, with Frank, whatever the fuck his name was. It's got interviews with people from the town. There's a clip of a woman sitting in the back of a truck just driving around the town. It was before they incinerated everything, and she's pointing out all the houses. She was like, "That's my friend. She used to see there. I used to see her dogs. That's my house. Those are my cedar trees." And everything is overgrown, and like, oh, it looks like a ghost town. It's so interesting. It's so interesting. Okay. People are pissed. The public pressure is mounting. So they yell at the EPA to figure out what the fuck is going on. So the EPA investigates after the public pressure. They do their soil sampling. They come down. They're like, "We got to get the soil sampling done before winter, you know, before December, because when the winter comes around, that means flooding." So they complete their soil sampling on December 3rd, 1982, which was the day before. The day before the worst flood in Times Beach history wiped out the town. The whole town was evacuated because of the flood. I mean, people couldn't live. There were houses like up to the roofs in water. So it was bad. The waters breached the floodplain and it went 14 feet above the flood stage. So that's not good for the town. So all the people in the town got evacuated because of the flood. And when they left for the flood, they never came back, at least not to live in their town, because that was the last time that they lived in Times Beach, Missouri. Can you imagine? You live in your town all your life, then because of some bullshit that a company did, you can't go back to your house. You go back and there's a big sign that says dioxin contamination. You can't go back here. Don't roll up your windows in your car. You're not allowed to go back to your home. You're not allowed to live here. How disheartened would you be? I feel bad for the people in the town. EPA investigates, they find that the dioxin concentration is as high as 100 parts per billion. And as we know, dioxin is deadly at only one part per billion, so that's not good. That's not very good. The EPA recommended that the town be evacuated and abandoned, and also that the town, its soil, and also its buildings should be incinerated. Which is what they should have done in the first place. All of this would have been avoided. All of it would have been avoided if NEPACO had just fucking incinerated the shit first. If they would have gone to a different contractor, if they wouldn't have gone to the lowest bidder. But even then, even if they decided to go to the lowest bidder, it was IPC's job to take care of it effectively, to take care of it correctly, not to subcontract it to some bumblefuck in a small town and not tell him what he was hauling. Ugh. I'm mad. I'm very mad today. So the residents of the town, they're driven out by the flood. They're not allowed to return home. The town was literally barricaded. So they threatened to sue. The townspeople, they threatened to sue the CDC. They threatened to sue the EPA. They threatened to sue the federal government if they don't get a fucking buyout right now. So in response, President Ronald Reagan creates the Times Beach Dioxin Task Force on January 7th, 1983. I am not making this up. This happened. It got the attention of the president. The federal government paid $33 million of the estimated $36.7 million cost to buy out the 800 residential properties and 30 businesses of Times Beach. The remainder of that cost was left to the state of Missouri. Wow. So at least they got a buyout. At least they got their houses taken care of. They got their money back, I guess. But it's not fair. It's not fair that they had to go through that. That's the least that they should have gotten. They should have gotten all brand new houses. By 1985, all the residents were relocated and the town was disincorporated by the governor of Missouri. And since it contained over 50% of the dioxin in the entire state of Missouri, 50%, over 50% Times Beach had, Times Beach was naturally chosen as the cleanup site and incinerator location. They built an incinerator the size of a town because you have to incinerate soil and houses. The cleanup was completed in 1997. When I was 2 years old. Oh my God. Holy shit. When I was fucking 2 years old, it cost $200 million to clean it all up. And I'm thinking back to NEPACO charged $3,000 a load, and they gave Russell Bliss $125, and it eventually cost $200 million fucking dollars to clean it all up. Not to mention the buyout for the town. In 1980, there is a silver lining here. In 1980, there was an act passed in the federal government. It's a federal law. It's entitled the Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act of 1980. It's also called CERCLA, C-E-R-C-L-A. And what CERCLA did was it established the Federal Superfund Program, which is administered by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. The program is designed to investigate and clean up sites contaminated with hazardous substances. Sites that are managed under this program are normally called Superfund sites. So if you hear about a Superfund site, that means that there's probably a little bit of toxic waste at that site. There was one in Plant City. I know that much. I was looking at the Superfund list. And there was one in Plant City right where I lived, but I don't know if it's active anymore. So that's a good thing. But it took until 1980 for there to be an act passed that said, hey, we're going to dedicate some funds to like help clean this up and help figure out how to deal with this. Until then, there was nothing. So Times Beach was unfortunately a catalyst, It might have been a catalyst for CERCLA. What am I looking for? English graduate? You have your degree is in secondary English education. You have a vernacular. What am I looking for? Times Beach, Missouri was... It was a guinea pig, basically. I wanted to find a better word for that, but I couldn't. So, if you go to the spot where Times Beach, Missouri is, all you're going to find is Route 66 State Park. And within that state park, you're going to find a little plaque that commemorates all the victims of Times Beach. Everything that happened there. And that's it. All it's, I mean, it's, I think it's, what does it say? I want to see the actual plaque. The dioxin plaque. I'm going to type it. Aha. Route 66 State Park in Times Beach, Missouri. I feel very bad for what happened. On this site, June 26th, 1997, one of America's greatest triumphs over environmental disaster came to an end. In the preceding 16 months, beginning March 17th, 1996, over 265,374 tons of dioxin-contaminated soil from 25 different sites in eastern Missouri were safely destroyed by high-temperature incineration. On July 2nd, 1997, Times Beach was designated a new state park for the people of Missouri. And that's all that's left. That's all that's left of the entire town. Ugh. There are other ghost towns that are around there. I might do an episode on other ghost towns. That would be cool. Some ghost towns here and there. I know there's a good, like Pitcher, Oklahoma. Pitcher, Oklahoma was the another Superfund site as well. It was a target of the EPA. But I don't think it was because of any negligence. I think it was because of what was going... I mean, that town, it was completely contaminated with lead. Pitcher, Oklahoma was contaminated with lead. Why? Because they mined lead. It was a lead mining town. So... Of course, that's going to happen. I know there's Centralia, Pennsylvania is another one that comes to mind. Centralia, Pennsylvania, there's a coal mine fire that's been burning underneath the town since 1962. There's still people that live in Centralia, Pennsylvania right now. There are still people that refused to leave. They were like, we're not going to leave. I would rather stay here. As of, I think, 2017, 5 people live in Centralia, Pennsylvania. There was 1,000 residents in 1980, then it dwindled to 63 by 1990, and then only 5 in 2017 because of that coal mine fire just burning. I think one of the most famous toxic towns is Love Canal. It's a neighborhood in Niagara Falls, New York, and I don't really know much about it. I know that it is toxic. I've heard Love Canal, Love Canal, Love Canal, Love Canal. And I just discovered something called the Valley of the Drums, which is a toxic waste site in northern Bullitt County, Kentucky, near Louisville, named after the fucking toxic waste drums that are strewn across the area. It's a 23-acre toxic waste site full of toxic waste drums. And if you Google a picture, I'm looking at a picture of it right now, it's barrels as far as the eye can see. Thousands of them. Thousands of them. Unreal. Unfucking real. Well, the moral of the story is we got to start doing something to help our planet. Otherwise, we're going to die. God damn, man. Times Beach, Missouri. What a horrid story. What a horrifying story that is. Just to think of. Like, I can imagine, like, just the confusion, the terror and confusion of, like, what is happening. And it happened right after Bliss sprayed the roads, so there's got to be suspicion. It must have been hard to be Russell Bliss during that time. I highly recommend watching that documentary. I'm going to go and watch it now. But the footage that was in there was incredible. www.patreon.com/a slice of ham if you're interested. Well... Wonderful talking to you. Wonderful being here. Thank you guys for listening. If you enjoyed this, be sure to give yourself a hug. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you're listening. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for listening to A Slice of Ham. I'll leave you with this noise now. You ready? Here's the noise. Okay, bye. Yeah, yeah.